here's the problem. You're all relaxed now. You think, ah, we can sit back, just listen to him talk or let our minds wander. And he's got to do all the work. Well, as you know, there is a crisis in congregational work ethic sweeping the country. Congregations just sitting there listening to rabbis speak without doing any work. And we're going to address that this morning by enlisting you in this sermon. You're going to have to work with me here. You're not going to just be able to sit back and think about lunch. And we will do this by asking you to open the Chumash to page 351 as active participants in this experimental sermonic scheme of congregational rabbinic cooperation. And the book will be needed for the first part of the sermon. I'll tell you when we're all done, but it won't be for a little while yet. 351. The beginning of this week's Parsha Va'era. God spoke to Moses, it says, and said to him, I'm the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as El Shaddai, that is another name for God, usually associated with power. But I did not make myself known to them by my name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, which we usually render as Adonai. Now, just as a factual statement, those of you who have been with us through the book of Genesis, is that true that God did not make himself known to the patriarchs by this name? I'll give you a hint. No. It's not true. That name is used all through the book of Bereshit, all through the book of Genesis. So how is it that God all of a sudden says, I didn't make myself known by this name? The usual answer is that this refers not to the name itself, but to a manifestation of what that name will bring to bear in the world. That is, the patriarchs didn't know the God of the Exodus. They never saw God work a succession of miracles to liberate a people. And what God is saying is the equivalent of, you may think you know, pick a name. You may think you know, let's say David, just to pull one out of the air. But wait till you see what David's about to do. That is, God is saying, I did not make myself manifest to them the way I am to you. And remember that in Hebrew, names mean something. Yes. Sorry, in this I have a little bit more experience. And in fact, there's a great deal of discussion about what the name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh means, whether it's different states of being, it means past, present, future. But for our purposes, what is important is that it's not literally true that God's name was not made manifest. But it is true that there is a certain aspect of God's name that the patriarchs didn't know. Now, let me ask you this. Is God saying this because Moshe is good or Moshe is bad? It seems, and I think most of us would agree, that God is saying this because Moshe is special. Moshe is great. Moshe is going to be different from all the patriarchs and therefore deserves to hear a new name. Would it surprise you to know that Rashi's comment, that is the great medieval commentator on this verse, is those patriarchs trusted me, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They believed in my power. They knew what I could do, but you, Moshe, because of your doubts, I have to show you something new. If this in fact surprises you, it is because we have not yet learned to do at Sinai Temple what every show that you watch week to week does on television, which is to recap what happened last week. Because part of the problem of holding a book like this in your hands is the parsha for the week is separated. The section that we read is separated by the Haftarah, by the section from the prophets, and then you go on to a new section in the new week. So if you look back on the page I asked you to open to, Vayera, you'll notice that it begins with what verse? 2, which means that chapter 6, verse 1 must have happened last week. And we begin chapter 6, verse 2 as though it's a new story. But you know, if you look in the Torah scroll, everything runs together. The breaks are very small. So we really, in order to understand this week's Parsha, have to turn back to last week's Parsha. And that you will find on page 340. What happened right before God told Moses, I am to reveal myself with a new name? Look at the last verse on page 340, and remember that this is chapter 5 and chapter 6. In other words, it's all part of the same story, even though in this book it's broken up. Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why did you bring harm upon this people? Why did you send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's dealt worse with this people, and still you haven't delivered your people. And the Lord said to Moses, you'll soon see what I'll do to Pharaoh. He'll let them go because of a greater might. Indeed, because of a greater might, he'll drive them from his land. And then God goes on to say, you don't know my name like the patriarchs did, but you're going to see something special. Now, this presents its own problems. Moses, the greatest figure in Jewish history, is not supposed to accuse God of doing something bad. And in fact, if you look at that sentence again, you'll see how the commentators who wish to exonerate Moses, the ones who want to get Moses off the hook, guess what they say? It says, when Moses says, O Lord, why'd you bring harm upon this people? Why'd you send me? What Moses really wants to say is, you should have sent someone better. Had you sent someone better than me, everything would have worked out all right. But because Moshe is anav mikol adam, Moses is the humblest man in the world, we're told in the book of Numbers. Therefore, Moses thinks it's all his fault. I grant this is a nice way of getting Moses off the hook. But it does seem, if you read that, like Moshe is accusing God. Even if you say, why'd you send me? He's still accusing God of a misjudgment, which is a problem if God knows everything. In fact, this is, I believe, the first time in the Bible that anyone accuses God of having done something immoral. Why'd you do this to this people? Abraham says, don't do something immoral with Sodom. He says, don't destroy that city. It's not right to do. But Moshe is saying, you brought harm to this people for no reason. Now, if you think about this for a moment, it seems like a terrible thing to do. How can you stand and accuse God, especially Moshe, who is, after all, the greatest figure in Jewish history? How can you accuse God of doing something wrong? How can you say that which you did in the world was immoral when who is the author of all morality? God. So you can say, God, I hope you don't do this thing in the future because it will violate the principles that you enunciate. But presumably, once God has done it, you shouldn't look up and say, that was wrong for you to do. And Rashi, the medieval commentator I mentioned before, the most famous commentator on the Bible in our tradition. Rashi doesn't like Moshe saying that, which is why he says that when God says, I didn't make myself known to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob this way, what God's really saying to Moses is, I didn't have to, because they knew enough to trust me. But you, Moses, you still got something to learn, so I'll show you a thing or two, and then maybe you'll reach the level of faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or perhaps even higher. Okay, now you can close your books. You can keep them open if you want. But now I have a theory for you. My theory is that it is possible to read this as if Rashi is 100% wrong. Because it is possible that the reason God reveals new aspects of God's self to Moshe is because Moshe gets angry and questions him. Maybe instead of thinking of it as something bad, God thought of it as something good. It could be that unquestioning trust is a bad model for faith. And Moshe's model is a much better one. And not only is it a better model for faith, but when you question God, you discover things about God that you didn't know before you questioned. Had Moshe not looked up at the heavens and say, "How could you do this?" God wouldn't have shown him a new name. And that idea that it is the question and the challenge that unfolds new dimensions, that idea, after all, is woven into our tradition. Let me read you a small excerpt from a long footnote. It's from the book Halachic Man by Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, one of the most famous rabbis of the 20th century, the rabbi who is the guiding light of what is now called modern orthodoxy of Yeshiva University. And in it, in the back, he writes that for some people, the religious experience is of a very simple nature, devoid of the spiritual torturousness present in the secular cultural consciousness of psychic upheavals, of pangs and torments that are connected with the development and refinement of man's spiritual personality. Religion is not, at the outset, a refuge of grace and mercy for the despondent and desperate. It's not an enchanted stream for crushed spirits, but a raging, clamorous torrent of man's consciousness with all its crises, pangs, and torments. In other words, at the outset especially, if you go to faith just so everything will be fine, then that's not the religion in which Rabbi Soloveitchik, or for that matter, Moshe, was schooled. It should trouble us, force us to question and wonder, to challenge and explore. If it's too comfortable, it's not faith. It's blind trust. But if it is pricked by conscience, if it is worrisome, if it is challenging, then there's a chance that it's real faith. A man came to the Kotzker Rebbe and said, "I'm terribly troubled. I'm tormented. I don't know what to do." The Kotzker Rebbe said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I doubt God." And the Kotzker Rebbe said, "So what?" He said, "Well, if there's no God, then God didn't create the world." And the Kotzker Rebbe said, "So what?" He said, "Well, if God didn't create the world, then there's no basis for morality." And the Kotzker Rebbe said, "So what?" He says, "Well, if there's no basis for morality, I don't know what to do, and I can't sleep nights, and it torments me." And the Rebbe said, "Ah, if you can't sleep nights and it torments you, I'm not worried about your faith." But what of the person who thinks there's no God and sleeps well? Or the person who thinks there is God and isn't troubled by the crises, pains, and suffering in the world and sleeps well? That's not Moshe's model, and not only Moshe. But remember, Yisrael means a wrestler with God. Yaakov wrestles with God and is dubbed Yisrael. When the angel comes to wrestle with him, he doesn't say, "Leave me alone, I'm getting a good night's sleep." And God reveals new dimensions and new aspects in answer to the question. It is not ease, but angst that often unfolds new dimensions of the world and new dimensions of God. It is certainly true that many times in our lives, faith is a comfort and a refuge and a sukkot shalom, a covering of peace. But anyone who wakes up in the morning and reads the newspaper or looks on the internet or listens to the news or glances out their window and doesn't at times question and wonder will have certain dimensions of God forever closed to them. God tells Moshe, I will show you a new name. Because Moshe, you asked a new question. And every question carries with it its own blessing. So when God says, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov didn't know this name, it may not be because they had such great faith and Moshe didn't, but because Moshe came up with a new way to ask. And just as the student learns something new by formulating a new question, so does the man of faith. Vayera, God reveals God's self more to Moshe than to anyone else. And nobody in the Torah yells at God like Moshe. And the next time we find someone yelling at God like Moshe, it is the book of Job. And you remember what happens at the very end of the book of Job? God comes out of the whirlwind and reveals God's self to the one who is angry, who questions, who wonders, who shakes his fist at the sky. And in the end, for both Job and Moshe, their reward is a broader and more comprehensive relationship with God, whom we can never understand, but with whom we can always share a dialogue of centuries, of tshuvot, of answers, and of she'elot, of deep and abiding questions. Shabbat shalom.